views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. That's that's my tinker laughing over the airways there. This is Problem Corner. Happily so.
We're trying to think of a problem, Dave.
Yeah, and it's a Tuesday, so that means it's a laundry house gang. And if you, the first Tuesday of the month, and if you have a thought or want to call in, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. But before we get into the show, I must give recognition to Craig Campo, who got here 1 minute before airtime, which is that's the earliest he's ever been late.
That's so right. I had wrapped up getting ready for our Can-Am sale and at Campo's 4122 Boat Street.
What's the price of your cheapest one?
Oh, boy. New, used? They start down around $7,000 or $8,000.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And where can they get financing at?
OAC.
Over at Compo.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we have in here Mike Tinker, Craig Campo, Al Barrett, and Wayne Heimer. Mr. Heimer, how you doing, sir?
Doing well.
How's the squirrel issue going?
I'm in abeyance on squirrels right now. I'm in eagles and plastic geese.
All righty then. And Mr. Barrett, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
And how is the Board of Game doing?
We're kind of on break for the summer.
Okay, and Mr. Campo, how you doing, sir?
Doing good. Just, peddling toys, enjoying this nice newfound yellow ball in the sky.
Now, just tell the truth, Craig.
What's that?
You sneaked out and went on a little river trip.
How was the good pasture?
Good, yeah. Water was up. Not a lot of animals up there.
If there's ever a white lie over the radio, that was it right there. But don't go up there. There's no game to hunt.
We actually went up to get a couple of bears and came back without a couple of bears, but we were trying to do that. It's encouraging. There's some signs of life up there, so that's good. But, it was a good trip.
Mike Tinker, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing really well, Dave. Thank you.
You enjoying your summer so far?
I am. I'm getting a whole lot of stuff done. I just happen to have a little, smaller projects this June and late April than I normally do, and so I've actually been able to get a lot done.
The first thing I'd like to bring up is Copper River, returns, expectations.
Okay.
And going down there to the canyon, and when would be a good time to do that?
We can go there. Well, if you want to go down and talk about a dip netter, you're in the second half of my page here, but the dip net fishery
Chitna
opening for the Chitna District sub-district is now online as of the day before yesterday. It will open for the first time on Monday, June 12th, 48-hour opener until midnight on Tuesday. It'll be down for a day, then back open the 15th and through Sunday, a 96-hour opener. And then starting to mid-June, this is a week a little bit later than they normally start. The fish coming in, noticed both in the commercial fishery early returns and in the counting early returns that the curve of them coming in, starting slow and then accelerating into quite a few fish coming in, is almost identical to last year, which was good in terms of its highs. However, it's about 8 days behind it.
Just Mike, when you talk about a 12-hour opener, a 96-hour opener, you're talking, is that commercial fish or dip netting?
Okay, the dip netting openers are longer. The first one is 48 hours starting on June 12th. Normally that would start June 7th or 8th if the fish had come in on
the same schedule.
This just recognizes that when they discovered fish present at Cordova in the first commercial opener, they realized that looking at the other factors like water temperature in the Copper River, that the fish were not going to be at Chitna in real early June, except in real low numbers. And so there's no sense sending people down there to hold their net in the water.
Those earlier openers are for the commercial guys.
So the early openers starting in May, usually the 19th statistical week of the year, are for the commercial, and they confirm a couple things. One is nobody expects to get wealthy the first 12-hour opener. Those are all 12 so far. There have been seven of them counting yesterday. The numbers weren't out this morning and when I left home for the others. But, for example, in those six commercial openers, they have the commercial fishermen have caught 380,154 sockeye. That's pretty good. They've caught just right at 7,000 kings, a few more chums, and somebody let 15 pinks in there. And I'm sure the poor guy who turned those in at the cannery is getting laughed at for having pinks this time of year. But and they got a bunch more yesterday. I haven't seen the numbers yet, but my guess is they caught another 125,000-130,000 sockeye probably.
Those commercial openers tell a dip netter?
They tell a dip netter when fish are present and when they start into the river, and then that's backed up by the sonar that's 40-some miles up the river at Miles Lake. And when the sonar starts picking up fish, and then that curve mimics the harvest curve of the commercial fishermen, and they go up, and it also mimics curves in previous years, then they know about how long it takes for a bunch of fish at Miles Lake to get to Chitna.
How long does that take usually?
8 or 9 days to get up there. And then they contract them right up the river, Copper Center, Gulkana area, and on up clear up to the upper reaches of the Copper River.
Is there a website a listener could go to?
Yeah, you can go into this. It's a little circuitous, but if you go in through the Fish and Game's website, go to Commercial Fishing and go to the Copper River District.
Okay.
You can find it, and there's about four or five categories there. You pick on the category you want. For example, one of them is escapement. And if you look in there at escapement, you will find that yesterday, or day before yesterday, there were 14,900 fish that went by the sonar in both the north and south bank. Total for the year of just under 87,000. And what's interesting is the forecast is ahead of that because the forecast is based on when they thought the fish would start rather than when they started.
Yeah.
But if you back up a week in the forecast.
Yeah, then you're true.
Well, if you back up a week, I'm giving the actual numbers. You would on those 2 days, you would be between 82,000 and 95,000.
Yeah,
and they were at 86.7. See, so that's telling us that the various systems they're using to make their estimates are working for them this year.
Well, gentlemen, I want to pat you all on the back because we not only give the Valdez fishing report, but we also give the Chitna Dipnet fishing report on this show. And that way, when you're going south, if you want to go dip netting or Valdez, who knows. Now, there's a river down there with red salmon in it and king salmon in it off the off the copper there.
Gulkana?
Not the Gulkana. No.
The Clutina, you're probably thinking of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When does that start heating up?
The Clutina gets sockeye salmon fairly soon now, in low numbers.
God, we're already, you know, 6th of June.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of fish in there by the 20th of June. The issue on the Clutina, what people try to do is they try to combine a sockeye fishing trip with a king salmon fishing trip. The Clutina has a later run of king salmon. They usually don't get in there until right around July. There's a few early ones. And so a lot of people that fish the Clutina kind of target 4th of July weekend to start. And then the Clutina, different than some of the other rivers like the Gulkana, which is another one, has a big sport fishery on it down there. That one closes. The Gulkana closes on the 20th of July.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the Clutina's open almost another week because the fish, that's a late run bunch, they're going up in there. So those fisheries are there. The actual folks down there that are fishing for sockeye sport fishing will be, if you were to drive through Copper Center now, you'll see a few of them out there going. Al's going to go down and do that.
Oh, no, I got a question for you on the Gulkana when you said it closes on the 20th of July. Is the department considering compensating the sport fishery with the two-week late run?
They never have before, Al.
No, thank you.
So I would imagine.
I'll talk to the sport fisherman director.
Yeah, I would imagine that they won't. Yeah, you could give him a call. But and what Al's talking about is the Gulkana for a lot of years had a significant early run, early June. By now, there would be a lot of king salmon in the river. This year, there were not even fish present at Copper Center until late last week. So the Gulcana probably doesn't have many.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here, and the first thing you're going to hear is the Valdez Fishing Report. Remember, it's following our fishing report.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fish on! The Valdez Fishing Report is brought to you proudly by Frontier Outfitters. Drop in for a visit to their extensive fishing department. From rods to reels, lures to lines, you'll see fresh and saltwater as well as fly fishing tackle for every game fish in Alaska. Stock up on supplies for your Alaskan-sized summer of fun. Coolers to camping gear, Frontier Outfitters is your first stop to making your next outdoor adventure a success. Your store for the outdoors, Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
This is Ricky Colapietro at the Valdez Fishing Report with an update on fishing in Valdez. Aaron Cruz of Wasilla, Alaska, reeled in a 147.2-pound halibut June 2nd to take the lead in the Valdez Halibut Derby. Michael Simmons of North Pole, Alaska, is in second place overall with a 120.6-pound halibut reeled in on June 1st, and Jason Waller of North Pole is currently in third place overall with a 101.6-pound halibut he reeled in on June 3rd. According to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, halibut fishing is off to a slow start, but anglers are producing consistent catches near the entrances into Prince William Sound, including Montague Strait, Hinchinbrook Entrance, Strawberry Channel, Orca Inlet, and other passages. Additionally, several halibut have been caught this spring in shallow water 60 to 90 feet in various bays throughout Prince William Sound. Aaron Cruz of Wasilla, Alaska, was fishing in Valdez with a purpose, to catch a derby-worthy fish. When asked about her day, she responded,
"Oh, it was amazing. Like, I was going for a derby fish, and I was catching some good size ones, kept throwing them back, and then I was burnt out for the day. I was like, okay, this is the last one. Threw my stuff in, let it hit the bottom, reeled up three times, and then the fish started running. And it actually only took me about 20 minutes to get her in."
Be sure to stop into the Valdez Prospector's new location on Egan Drive, right across from the museum, for everything you need for fishing in Prince William Sound. Licenses, bait, derby tickets, and the best selection of lures and tackle to help you catch the derby winner. Stop into the Valdez Prospector on Egan Drive for everything for your fishing adventures.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR Weather.
Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 79. Southerly winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows dip down to about 55. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tomorrow. High of 78. Upper 70s Thursday with a chance for scattered storms. Much cooler Friday with highs in the upper 60s and showers. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have the Laundry House Gang in the studio here with me. If you have a question or a thought for them, we're at 907-458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255. Mike, what is next on your list, sir, since I sort of went a different trail on you?
No, that's fine. The fact that you picked out of my list down in the middle instead of at the start is just fine, Dave. we understand you politicians get excited about doing these things. You don't want to start with number one, but, you know. One of the things that we did last week at the Laundry House Gang, and most of your listeners kind of have some familiarity with the fact that the group gets together once a week and we bash out some of these issues. Sometimes we go on beyond that and make get together with the various agencies and talk to them about what they're doing, sometimes write comments on their proposals, that kind of thing. So last Wednesday, we had an opportunity to talk with the brand new, literally within last couple weeks, director of sport fish for the state of Alaska, a fellow by the name of Israel Payton. Israel served 8 years on the Board of Fish and did a great job there. Put his application in and went through the process and has now been appointed director. And one of the things that he was wanting to do in the first month a bit was one, get out and visit his staff in the regions where he has sport fish staff, for example, here in Fairbanks, and then also meet with groups like ours that have an interest in this kind of things take an active role in the regulatory process of statutes, you know, input to the legislature, that kind of thing. And so he came up and we spent the lunch hour together on Wednesday. It was a very, very good meeting. Gave us a chance to talk about some of our local sport fish issues with him so that he could have an input there that wasn't just through the department, where there's always a orientation of what's the most important and what isn't and like that. We tried to just touch on things that have been worked on here for a long time. We're still working on them, and some of them are getting a little bit better, like grayling fishing in the Chena, and we hope to continue that trend in the past. And I thought, pretty good meeting.
Yeah.
I think one other thing that's on his resume that's kind of impressive is he got an 80-inch bull moose, right? He has got an 80-inch moose in his resume. Pretty impressive.
When he introduces himself, Dave, he says, well, he says, I know you guys in the room have done a lot of hunting and fishing, but I got a bigger moose than you did.
Yeah.
The thing that I found most encouraging was that he plans for that department division to be very aware of and interested in what the people are thinking. And it was refreshing to me to hear a director of a division say, I want to hear from the people. Yeah, I want to hear from everybody.
I think he understands who he works for. Right?
Yeah, that's
a, what a concept.
Yeah, and just to add to that, you know, before he was on the Board of Fish, he was, you know, a 15, 20-year member of the local AC down there. He grew up in Skwetna, and his father was very instrumental in Supreme Court cases that he argued, Peyton versus the state. So he's got a lot of background,
a lot of local, educated, working knowledge background. Yeah. That's good to hear.
And another interesting thing that happened that day is just that morning I had been going through some regulatory material. Al and I do that, where most people read sports afield in the bathroom. We take the statutes and regulatory stuff with us and read that in there. But I had just...
Al doesn't think that way. If he's bringing it in there, it's not to read.
I need to concentrate.
Let's not digress.
Al's pretty cheap. He doesn't buy, you know...
Oh, no, the state gives him one, Dave.
Yeah, Jarman. Yeah, he doesn't go that direction. He brings in reports.
Sorry, Al. Well, what I'm getting at here is one of the sticking points on the dipnet fishery for years has been access. And we've gone back and forth of piggybacking on agencies to try to help keep the access open so people can, you know, if a rock rolls in the road or a tree falls across, somebody gets it out of the way. And there are three agencies that are charged with helping with the Chitna fishery. One's Department of Fish and Game, as you'd imagine. One's DOT, because their access is on right away an old roadway down there. And the other is DNR, and they have some say in the cookie jar there because of making sure that waste gets picked up, people have places to camp, that kind of thing. So one of the things that the department does is and it's mostly a priority thing. It's not a big priority for them. Is they don't really go look and see what it is in there they're supposed to do. Do they have any charge responsibility under the Alaska statute? So just off the cuff, I had dumped into 1610.570 that morning, Alaska statute, which charges those three agencies in a very short, brief package to maintain and secure the access and support for the fishery. And it doesn't say that they may do it. They might do it if the stars are aligned correctly. It says they shall do it. And I think
they shall.
That's right. And all of you who have been mayor of a town like Fairbanks understand the difference between shall and something else.
May, yes.
Yeah. So
this is your job now.
Yeah, that's correct. And so I think that was a good thing for him to hear. He wrote down that reference to take a peek, and I encouraged them to do that. The two staffers he had with him kind of looked at me like, gosh, you know, we didn't realize that was there either. And that's one of the problems, is that people even in management level in the state do not look at where their basic responsibility comes from, because they always do it the way they did before.
Yeah.
Or in Wayne's case, when he got assigned to the ANILCA task force, this is a brand new thing and we got to have somebody to do it. So, you know, move your desk over there and sharpen your pencil type of thing, without really looking at what was there. And then, of course, when he was there, he took a look at what it actually said in ANILCA and realized, like some of the rest of us, that
doing it wrong,
what it says and what federal agencies are doing,
two different things,
don't have much relationship.
There you go. How about that, Wayne?
It was easy work. I was good at it.
Nothing like ego in the room.
Well, disliking the feds kind of comes naturally.
You know, I'd rather work with you than against you. just saying. Isn't that right, Craig?
That's exactly right.
Mike, what's next on the list?
Well, you were talking that divide surfaced again in the last 48 hours. 2 weeks ago, the state started intensive management wildlife project for the year. It's an ongoing project, and it's a bear wolf type of thing to support the caribou herd down at Mulchatna. And the department has been out there removing some animals. They've been successful at it, and they are now, you know, getting bumped around by the Fed because of that. Well, you know, we don't believe in predator control, so you guys are doing the wrong thing. And that's one of the issues that is constantly a problem here. It is shown, for example, in another place where, you know, falling off the wagon. The BLM right now has a big review out for a dozen new conservation areas. They've been told to find on BLM multipurpose lands all these special things we got to do. Well,
before you get too far down there on that bear removal program,
Mulchatna,
you know, that was basically, it started out being about 100 square mile area that they anticipated to do the bear removal in. And of course, they really concentrate on where the main calving is done, the herd's calving at. And so they initially set up and started flying over looking for bears and the caribou calving, but they didn't go to their traditional spot. They moved a little further north and moved up into just the fringes of Unit 18.
That'd be the caribou that moved?
The caribou moved, yes. And so they regrouped and got up there. And in a very short time, in, like I said, about a 50 square mile, they removed 94 brown bears, 5 black bears, and 5 wolves this year in basically a month's worth of time.
That's a good predator control program.
I'm just astounded at the numbers that in such a small area.
Say that again. How many?
94 brown bears, 5 black bears, and 5 wolves.
In 50 square miles?
Yes, it was an incredibly small.
5 by 10.
Well, yeah, it was very small.
Yeah, calving areas are like that. That could be.
And so I was just impressed with the numbers. And I guess maybe that's why the feds are a little upset, but I don't know why they are. It was all done on state land.
What time of year was it done in?
Just this last
couple
month,
weeks.
Yeah.
May.
May,
When
just
the bears
kind of finished up. And so that was, and the Mulchatna caribou herd is, you know, one of them herds that it's so far decreased in population and that we're not even hunting them, even at a subsistence level. So hopefully this will give them a real good jump.
Yeah, for mortality.
I mean, they got a few disease issues out there, too.
That's what gets me about regulations. They put out regulations to stop hunters, which maybe takes 3 to 5% of the game, versus predators, which takes 90 to 95% of the game. And they're always looking at the human toll, not the predator toll.
It's easier for them to do that.
Well, no, it's not that so much. It's that that without getting into a predator control type of thing, which they don't like to do, it's not their policy. They can control people.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier. You know, you put a notice for the people to leave them alone in the newspaper. It's pretty hard to do that for bears. You know, they don't read that much.
No, they don't. But Wayne, you have some of the.
It kind of comes to, you know, the BLM thinks they're managing, the state thinks they're managing. And the ringer is nobody, save myself, actually knows what management is.
I'm reading your book, Sheep Management.
I've pondered it for decades, and I think what management is intervening in any system, whether it's finance, human resources, fishing game, whatever. You intervene in a system to maintain, protect, enhance, or expand, or develop a predetermined benefit. Now, the BLM's predetermined benefit is not having any people use it. the state's predetermined benefit is providing maximum opportunity for use.
Yeah, so diverse. So,
yeah, we're having a little trouble getting together on what management is.
Yeah. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to have some bumper music for you. This is probably done by Melissa Burnett. It's John Cougar Mellencamp. Then we're going to go into some Fox News, state news, commercials, weather, and then we'll be back with a commercial from Compos.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This war in Ukraine has done a number on that country's infrastructure. Most recently in southern Ukraine, a dam collapsing today. Tens of thousands of residents around Kherson had to evacuate. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, commenting on the situation, says the UN is going to help those who were displaced.
The United Nations and humanitarian partners are rushing support in coordination with the government of Ukraine, including drinking water and a water purification tablet and other critical assistance.
Ukraine accuses Russia of busting that dam out. The American government cannot confirm that. On the Fox News Channel, presidential candidate and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott says he's not worried about how many GOP contenders are in the field, but he's ready to debate them.
I look forward to being on the stage and having a conversation with the American people, how you can be optimistic, positive, and yet a strong-willed conservative.
First Republican debate August 23rd on the Fox News Channel. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTVF reports on Thursday, June 1st, representatives from the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the Department of Transportation, and others gathered at the Tanana Lakes Recreation Area boat launch to commemorate the start of a new project for the area. The effort now being undertaken is a massive one, according to John Hawes, park superintendent with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. It is the largest component of the development of the park that we've ever done. From summer 2023 through the beginning of summer 2024, crews will work to pave roads between the boat launch and the swimming beach. They'll also add a new access point for the park. We're going to extend Lathrop Street into the park across the railroad tracks over the levee down here to what is the motorized boat launch for the Tanana River. And then there will be a segment of the road that goes over to the non-motorized boat launch, which also will be paved, Haas said. When the work is finished, Tanana Lakes will be better able to handle the demand seen at the park throughout the year. The recreation area will remain open to the public during construction.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Hello, this is Doug Johnson. More than 25 years of helping Alaskans injured in automobile accidents and the families of Alaskans killed in car crashes have taught us a few things. Driving is a full-time job. Avoid eating, talking on cell phones, applying makeup, and reading while you drive. Other Alaskans deserve your full attention. Powering 6,000 pounds of metal at 65 miles an hour creates risk to other Alaskans. Pay attention when you drive. Johnson & Associates has helped injured Alaskans for more than 25 years. It's who we are. And while you hope you never need us, we're here if you do.
Hey Fairbanks, June is DeWalt month at Denali Industrial Supply with DeWalt products on sale all month long. This is the biggest DeWalt sale of the year, featuring DeWalt Bear tools, kits, batteries, and more. And mark your calendar for DeWalt Demo Day on Wednesday, June 14th from 10 to 2 and free lunch served 11 to 1. DeWalt factory reps will be there to demo the newest tools and answer your questions. Don't miss it.
Denali Industrial Supply, 1499 Van Horn Road. Look for the big red roof.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have the upper management of the Laundry House Gang in here.
And have you met my three friends?
Mr. Heimer, Mr. Barrett, and Mr. Tinker. No, I have not. Now, let's talk about when the Laundry House Gang gets together and meets.
We meet every Wednesday at
noon. Which will be tomorrow.
Yeah, at noon at TVSA. It's a bring-your-own-lunch type of thing. Usually have a couple dozen anywhere. Well, it depends on the time of year. Anywhere from 12 to 30, 35 people. We're getting some new faces in there, or people that don't come by a lot that come through there. We get a really good report from Captain Spitzer with Alaska State Troopers. He's there almost every weekend.
Yep.
Tells us, and I've talked on this radio show.
Literally came in and out of the woods last week.
Yeah, really impressed with him and his efforts to combat both, you know, fentanyl, criminal. He did mention that one thing I thought that was interesting. We'll just touch on this. Some gal, and I can't remember, it was Chino Hot Springs Road or somewhere, last week or so, 2 weeks ago, saw four gals, young gals, rifling through mailboxes.
Mm-hmm.
That was last week.
And she ran out there, and they scattered into the woods. She calls the troopers. They put a chopper in the air, found these girls, and had them arrested.
Good.
Yeah, so, I mean,
that's federal. You know, yeah, you're going to that's mail. Right. Oh, boy.
Yeah, so anyway.
They had a $50,000 and a $100,000 warrant on either one of them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
they were already wanted.
Yeah, so
anyway. But people do that. Jim Matherly from the governor's office comes by and lets us know if there's anything in our arenas that would be of interest, and also is then a conduit where we can get back to the Governor Dunleavy's staff if we need to. Type of thing. There are several other agencies. There's a five or six organizational reps. And what I mean by that is we have a fellow from Ducks Unlimited. Friends of NRA is there every week, Dipnetter Association, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but if you look at your group and what you can do and what you have done, is you have access to U.S. senators, congressmen, governors, mayors, representatives, state senators, across the board.
And almost every one of them, Dave, that's come to us has said the same thing. They like our group because we're not there with our hand out.
Yeah.
You know, they're so used to people asking, hey, we need to fund this, and we're special interest.
And
we're special interest for Alaskans.
Once in a while, you will try to shut down the Chena River for those floaters.
Oh, of course. We're trying to fire that project back up again.
We're going to bring that up on Bill Satterberg's birthday, April 1st.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Halibut are getting in the way.
Oh, I thought of a good new one for Satterberg's birthday, by the way.
Okay.
He's going to sue for distracted driving. He's going to sue the Barnett Street crossing guard for distracting driving.
Are you ready for a phone call?
Sure. Yeah.
Good morning. You're on the air with the Laundry House Gang, and your name is?
My name is Lucy.
Hello, Lucy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, I wanted to ask Mike Pinker about, you remember years ago, a gentleman named Don Young?
Yeah, we remember Congressman Don Young. Yeah.
Not the congressman, the
biologist.
Oh, biologist.
Area biologist.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, gosh, I tell you, I used to disagree with him. I'd call him. And I wanted Mike to know Mike is a lot nicer than Don Young.
Okay. Mr. Tinker, you want to address this situation?
You know, Don was came to us as most biologists do, became an area biologist, and Lucy was in really good company in having discussions with him and maybe disagreeing. Don had a lot of introductory issues that he debated and left with the wrong impression of where he came with the advisory committee in Fairbanks and whatnot. But he learned over the years, got a little better at some of the things he was doing. The numbers changed. In other words, some areas that were really in bad shape when we started with intensive management and that kind of thing, we were able to get under control and been able to keep them on a pretty flat. He was involved in all that. So some of the things that he accomplished were significant for our community.
Ready for another phone call?
Sure.
Here we go. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with the Laundry House Gang, and your name is?
Yeah, this is Patrick. I got a quick question for the gang.
Okay.
What are they doing, or what's their position on the trawlers that are kind of raping our seas close to our Alaskan shores?
Okay, we'll let them do that. What's your position on the trawlers that are...
Oh, I didn't hear the question.
So I got the question. The issue came up in the last several years. Actually, it's been a little longer. Of the trawlers, especially in the Bering Sea, taking a certain percentage of young salmon that come up, especially chums and kings that are pretty exciting to the.
Excuse me, as a landlubber, what's a trawler?
A trawler is a fish that is a boat, usually several hundred feet long, that brings a drag trawl. A drag trawl is like imagine a potato sack with some weights on it dragging right on the bottom.
Ooh, okay.
And bottom feeder.
And basically catching everything in between. Now, they can raise those. I mean, you can put floats on them and raise through the water.
They try and get the pollock.
But they're trying to get pollock, which are usually close to the bottom. But and there's some others. They do make a lot of money off of bycatch. Well, originally, there was not much regulation, if you would, on what they caught. They sold X pounds of pollock and X pounds of fish. Nobody paid much attention. And then we started having these rivers in northwest Alaska, to include the Yukon and in some places the Kuskokwim. The salmon returns started down. They started looking at these fisheries that are considered intercept fisheries when you catch them in salt water and they're headed in for spawning in the fresh water. They've put some regulation on it. Some of the trawlers have observers on board. They've put limits on how many they can catch in some issues, but they're still out there in a semi-regulated sense and probably catching more fish than we would like them to. And the reason I would say that is the crisis on the Yukon River is at a point where if all fishing on that stock in salt water were to stop, we're probably in all four or five of us lifetime not going to see a recovery in the Yukon. They just aren't there. There's not enough coming up to propagate the species.
And those are salmon, right?
Salmon, right. And what we're trying to talk about here is the sustained yield part of what the state is trying to do in its management, although we certainly agree with Wayne and try to hold the state's feet to the fire on what management really is. But the issue here is that a few years ago, maybe a decade or two ago, 20 or 30,000 king salmon and 40 or 50,000 chum salmon probably wasn't a big deal to the trawlers and people were not paying attention, but now it is. For the Yukon, if you listen to the Yukon fishers now and there are people trying to get back into a subsistence fishery, their mantra is every salmon counts, and they really are in that situation.
Ready for another phone call?
Yeah.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with the Laundry House Gang, and your name is?
I had to call you back because I have a question for Mike.
Go ahead, Lucy. Now, what's your question again?
That I know there's a Sanitation Station at Tyler Station.
We're having a hard time hearing you. Lucy, we're having a hard time listening to you. Could you repeat it again?
Salmon counting stations, how many in Alaska do we have?
Thank you. We can hear you better there. How many salmon counting censuses, how many in Alaska do we have?
That's an interesting. Lucy, I don't know. I know here in the northern region from of interest to Fairbanks, there are the sonars on the Yukon River. There are two of them, one at Eagle and one at Pilot Station. The Kuskokwim has some minor sonar, and there is some portable use on various drainages, and I'm not sure where there are others. I mean, for example, when you go down the other way, then the Kenai has them and the Copper River have them and like that. But I'm sure that's not the total. There's almost have to be some in Southeast, too. That's something I could research for you. The ones we try to keep track of up here, like this time of year, are the Yukon and the Copper River. And the Yukon is kind of interesting. Almost always its recording devices start putting in, even if they're zeros, they start putting in data on June 1st, and there's absolutely nothing on the page yet. I don't even know if the sonars are in.
Ready for another phone call?
Yeah, knocking them out.
Good morning. You're on KF. Well, we lost that one. Sorry. Okay. And with that thought, we're going to take a commercial break. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Let's face it, life can certainly bring accidents our way. Whether it's a vehicle accident or a bad fall on the ice, your injuries can range from mild and temporary to a life of chronic pain and disability. If you find yourself in that situation, call Jason Wiener and Associates. This outstanding group offers five attorneys with decades of experience. Get the facts and opinions that you need and solid advice so you can make informed decisions. They will design a retainer agreement that works for you and your case. Make sure you are represented by the right attorney. Jason Wiener and Associates, 907-452-5196.
Who is that man? Master of the TV remote, the nimble ninja of the northern woods, whose very presence sets the mighty bull moose to quiver in fear and caribou running for higher ground. Skipper of boats, maestro of the campfire. He doesn't wear a cape, just an old fishing hat, but he is your dad. And Father's Day is Sunday, June 18th. Find him a gift he'll love at Frontier Outfitters, your store for for the outdoors, Frontier Outfitters, for his Alaskan lifestyle.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today with highs around 76. Winds out of the east around 5 miles per hour. Lows level off around 53. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. A blend of clouds and sun. Tomorrow, chance for scattered thunderstorms. Daytime highs approaching 74. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have the Laundry House Gang, and boy, are they babbling. But we're going to take a phone call real fast. Good morning. You're on the Laundry House Gang, and your name is? And we just lost that person.
Okay. So, in the meantime, for Lucy, Al has looked up the number of sonar sites, and what'd you come up with?
I think about 21. Okay. Just short search.
Now, last week the Supreme Court came out with a decision that affects Fairbanks in general.
Well, it affects the country, yeah. But it's Clean Water Act. It was a case brought by a family named Sackett in Idaho, in the Priest River drainage, and they had bought a lot in a subdivision, and there were no waterways in the subdivision. The closest stream was across the road down the hill. Their drainage from the upper part of the subdivision all went into a roadside ditch, which was dry most of the time. But when it did get wet, the water went under the road and eventually got into the minor stream, which ran down 4 or 5 miles, got into a bigger stream that ran into Priest Lake. And the Corps of Engineers, who have changed the definition of waters and associated waters in mostly a broadening sense, in other words, made it broader and broader and broader each time, determined that theirs was a associated water, and therefore they needed a Corps permit to fill the property. And, of course, they'd already started filling the property because they were so far from water, they couldn't see it from there. And the issue then became the definition of wetlands, and that's what in waters there. And that's what is critical in this court case. Because what the EPA had done is over about 25 years, they had changed the definition of wetlands and associated wetlands several times. Several times, maybe 5 or 6 times, without ever going back to Congress and asking the question, is this what you intended us to do in the Clean Water Act? And when this got to the Supreme Court with the Sackett saying, how on earth could we be responsible for a problem in waters, in putting a fill in our lot so we could build a house on it? And they were not filling because it was wet. They were filling more because it was slope.
Yeah.
So anyway, the court went into that and blistered the EPA and said, there is no way in reading the original Clean Water Act that we believe Congress intended you to go to these extremes. And the reason that I think that that's important, not only for getting their attention and making them go back through a congressional regulatory review, but also we have a similar problem, very, very similar problem here in Fairbanks. Let me go through it for you.
Yeah.
First there was ozone, and then there was PPM 10, and then there was PPM 2.5, okay? That's parts per million of particulates. Now, wherein did Congress take a look and see if that was within the authority of the original Air Quality Act? My guess is that if we were to look, we will find that it's been the same kind of delay with the EPA making new definitions of what is an air quality problem without any congressional review. In other words, I think they're opening themselves up to the same kind of decision that was just made on the Clean Water Act.
Mr. Coppa.
So I just had a brainstorm. Let's have Jim and Cheryl Sackett sue the EPA over PM 2.5. Sackett versus EPA Alaska version.
Mr. Heimer.
Again, this goes back to what you think management is. if your goal, your predefined benefit of management is whatever it is with EPA, you feel quite justified in saying, well, this is a wetland. Didn't used to be, but now it is. And it happens all the time with the EPA's most marvelous that redefinition ever was defined carbon as a pollutant.
Yeah.
Okay, Fairbanks, I'm going to give you a competition. The first one who calls in and tells me the name of the doctor in the room, you get a $25 gift certificate to Compost, and I'm buying it. But if you lose, you'll be ridiculed forever.
But
No, nothing from you, sir. And if you can call in, the first person to tell me, out of the five people in this room, name the doctor.
Ooh.
And then you get a $25 gift certificate from Compost. How does that sound?
I like the part where Prue's was paying for it.
Yeah. Anyway.
I need a new spark plug.
We have someone here.
Can you get a spark plug?
Here we go.
And your name is?
Aaron.
Aaron, and who's the doctor in the room?
Heimer.
Hey!
Okay, go see Craig Compo, and
free spark plug.
And he'll bill me, and you get $25 of whatever Craig Compo has, and I will pay for it, okay?
Thank you.
Bye. How's that for a quick little?
The definition thing does become critical.
It does.
You know, you have BATF just defining a brace-assisted pistol, whatever that is, as a rifle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and you know, it just gets crazier and crazier, but the thing that drives these creative definitions is folks are trying to manage for a predefined benefit that may or may not make any sense.
True.
Yeah. And it's a predefined benefit that is not and has not or was not considered at the time when the original problem was never conceived at the Clean Water Act or the Clean Air Act stage. And so what they've done is they've run these definitions out from ridiculous to extreme.
There you go.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, you know, these acts are 50 to 75 years old, and nobody even tries to review or amend any of these things. So you get an agency that goes a little wild and says, well, it's all legal till somebody takes me to court.
The Park Service, yeah. EPA, yeah.
You know, until we're challenged, we're doing what we want.
Yeah. And even when we're told not to do what we did, we're still going to do what we want.
And even when the Supreme Court tells them what the ruling is, they'll still do what they want to do.
What was that F word?
I didn't
that bomb? Was that the doctor?
Yeah, no. and the real tragedy in this is that there are things that have and issues that have changed with the definitions that do need some consideration.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they expand them across the board.
Yeah.
And they don't look at the background type of things and where it comes from. And so when you have this final rule that says this is this, if you have a orange bush on your lot, you're in wetlands,
Okay. Then
you've missed totally the whole point of having clean water in the first place.
Okay, gentlemen, we got about 5 minutes left, so you know what I like to do the last 5 minutes, the round of what you should do in the month of June to get out and do something. Mr. Heimer, besides a squirrel killing orgy at your house, what would you want everyone to do?
I'm working for the Park Service today.
Okay.
And the dandelions have sprung up in all their glory in my yard, and I just can't sleep at night fearing that some of those might go from yellow flowers to little white heads, to little airborne seeds.
Those are invasive species.
And end up along
species.
The road in Denali Park. So I'm mowing the heads off dandelions to save the world.
That's noble of you. Mr. Barrett, what's your thought for Fairbanks to get outside and do something?
Oh, well, I think, you know, it's fair game for just about anything. You can start heading to Valdez, you know, maybe wait on Chitna a week or so yet. And, you know, the lakes are starting to open up, and there's good fishing on the lakes. As soon as the cheetah goes down and clears up, you'll be into some good grayling fishing. So it's all coming. There's bear hunting going on, or people hunting in camouflage after bears.
Mr. Compo, what do you?
Well, you know, I'm a boat guy, so that's my priority. Did I mention we have a used boat starting under $9,000 at Tecompo's on 4120? Yeah. Anyway, no, boating. That's my passion. People can get out and go boating. If you are in the market, you know, my shameless plug, we're right on the river, so stop by there. But really what I like to do is just get away from people, get up on the water and just go and get away from folks and float and fish and maybe look for bears this time of year. Dal's right, this is the time of year when the lake fishing is best shortly after the ice goes out. You know, there's some monsters in Harding Lake, and I think they've caught over, I think Fish and Game actually over the years, somebody told me once there was four of them over 50 pounds that they've shocked, but that they've taken out of the lake. So I don't know if that's true or not, but there are some monsters in Harding Lake.
And Mike Tinker, what's your advice?
Well, you and I, Dave, are going to go fish off the Compo Dock at Harding Lake, see if we can get some of those big lake trout. This is the time, just to touch on the fishing, the high lakes are opening up. There are, like on the Denali Highway and places, the ice is out of the way enough there that people can fish around the edge and in open areas. So that's a thing to do if people want to get out a little bit. Still cold. Summit Lake, Paxson Lake, still lots of ice. There, so they're not open to the point where you'd want to go up and throw your boat in and go all over the place. But certainly, if you're cautious, you can work around the edges there. I think fishing's a really great June type of activity. And then the other thing, of course, is to be good to Mother Nature. While Wayne has been working with his squirrels, my wife and I have been thrown off our front porch by a family of robins, who now have several little ones about 4 feet from the front door. And so we're getting our extra steps for the day by walking around and using our back door while these little baby robins are coming along here.
My advice is two, but the first one has two parts. What I'd do is I'd go to Compo's and I'd buy a Can-Am, and then I'd go up into the White Mountains and take the Compo Trail. Up the trailhead about 15, 20 miles in and enjoy it. That'd be a great trip. Maybe stay at one of the cabins up there.
You could take your inflatable boat with you.
Yeah. Then the second part of what I'd do is I would thoroughly enjoy the Tanana Lake campgrounds this in the month of June. You're going to get good weather. You're going to be able to get a tan. You're going to go. You can go get things that run on the river from Compo or Sea-Doos or Ski-Doos or whatever they are.
And that being rehabbed road-wise, access-wise right now?
Yeah, they're doing some work out there.
They're keeping it maintained, yeah.
No. There's a construction project either just about underway that's going to do some surfacing on the roads out there. It'd be nice.
Paving.
But that won't get in the way. They'll certainly...
Kind of like Fifth Avenue here?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm doing Fifth Avenue.
The listeners don't know that in order to get into the radio studio today, you have to park kind of at the old hospital on the other side of the river, and then walk up and down through the ditch out in front where they're doing water and sewer work.
Sort of like that song, "Over the River and Through the Woods."
That's
to Grandmother's
it.
House
That's
we
it.
Go.
Over the river and through the parking lot to Grandmother's house.
There you go.
I hope you don't get hit by a ricocheting brick from the building.
Polaris
building.
Yeah.
Okay. So
hire Satterberg.
We have about 2 minutes left, so let's go to a round called final comments. Final comments from Mr. Heimer, the doctor in the room.
I don't know.
Excuse me. I'm reading your book on management of sheep. You know everything.
Well, I pretend.
You pretend well, sir. Mr. Barrett, what's your final words or conversation?
I've just been doing some reading a fairly old book, so we don't repeat history again, is basically what it boils down to. It was done in the early 90s, and I've been gleaming a few things off of it, so it's good to review some history and what other people have tried to do in the past.
Mr. Compa.
I recommend everybody maybe take a look at Must Read Alaska and read up on Mary Peltola and some of the shenanigans that are going on between her and her daughter's People Against Fossil Fuel group, as well as her doubling down on the puberty drugs for teens. This is who you voted for if you voted for
it. And her husband's lobbying efforts?
Yes, yeah. Must Read Alaska's got a couple good stories on my least favorite senator.
She's a congresswoman.
Congressman, yeah.
And Mr. Tinker, what's your thoughts?
I would say that if you can run into one of our local legislators, this is a great time to cubbyhole them for a minute, talk about what happened during the last session. We were fortunate we had a couple legislators in last week, and then in a special meeting we had on Sunday, we had two more. Really good to see those people and be able to talk to them without the pressure of them having to run and be in session in 20 minutes. But it's never a good idea to pass up an opportunity to talk to them.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. As usual, you're outstanding and exceptional. And Fairbanks, you have a great day, and I will see you tomorrow.
It's also including you, Greg.